Good morning. Nice to see everyone. I've been asked to announce that our learning together this week here at the OU Israel Center is being dedicated in loving memory of our dear sister Chaya Bluma Bat Avraham Meir Betty David Kahana Alea Shalom on her 42nd Yahrzeit. Tehei Nishmata Tzura Bitzur HaChayim. This is being dedicated by Mel David Gitti and Mendy Zwick. Okay. The global pandemic has been a time for serious self-reflection and introspection. For 2 years, we had nothing else to do but sit at home and think. Think about what's important to us, what we value, what we want out of life. And it's caused many people to make choices, major life decisions. And it's not surprising that many Jews have chosen Aliyah. Maybe it was because they're examining their values and considering the Jewish value of living here in the land of Israel. Maybe the lack of mobility or ease of travel prevented them from visiting Israel, which in the past they had done with ease. Maybe it's because all of a sudden they realized they could work from home or really from anywhere. I have a cousin who had been living with his family in Philadelphia, and he picked up his family at the beginning of the pandemic and lived in Hawaii for about a year plus. And now Baruch Hashem is living in Zichron Yaakov here in the state of Israel. So, Aliyah is on the rise, and here I will read for you from Yisrael Hayom from May 26th. This was an article that appeared in the Yisrael Hayom newspaper on May 26th. Aliyah and Integration Minister Penina Tamanov-Shata heralded the growing number of diaspora Jews who've come to the Jewish state in recent years. Yet if she had it her way, the influx is just beginning. Speaking at a press conference with Nefesh B'Nefesh co-founders Rabbi Yoshua Fass and Tony Gelbart on Monday, she said that more than 100,000 new immigrants have moved to Israel from other countries in the last 4 years. That's incredible. That's my own editorial, by the way. That's incredible. It's a huge achievement, she said, noting that our destiny is as one people bound together. Last year, more than 4,000 Jews from the United States made Aliyah. There were among the more than 27,000 Jews worldwide who moved to the Jewish state in 2021. They were among the more than 27,000 Jews worldwide who moved to the Jewish state in 2021, marking a 30% increase in immigration overall. So there's a 30% uptick in Aliyah in recent years. That's wonderful. That's incredible. That's promising. That's encouraging. I mean, Kein Yirbu, you know. And with the war in Ukraine, you've had thousands of Ukrainian Jews in recent months make Aliyah, and they're expecting a major Aliyah from North America this summer. Okay. But our question this morning is there a mitzvah to settle in the land of Israel? And if it is a mitzvah, does that mitzvah apply today? Now, maybe I'm preaching to the choir here or preaching to the converted. You all have chosen to cast your lot with the fate of the Jewish people here in the state of Israel and make Aliyah. Some of you 20, 30, 40, 50 or more years ago even, this summer, we'll be celebrating 13 years Al Admat HaKodesh, my family and I, very exciting. This Tammuz, just in a few weeks, will be our 13th Aliyahversary, which we celebrate each year. But even though I'm preaching to the choir, the converted here in front of me, we certainly have a lot of people joining us through the modern miracle that is the internet and Zoom and these things. And the Shiurim are archived and on the OU Israel website and on the OU.org website and other places too. But even if I'm preaching to the converted or preaching to the choir here, I think understanding this mitzvah and the nature of this mitzvah, is it even a mitzvah or not? But I think this discussion this morning perhaps can imbue our choice to live here, for those of us who've chosen to live here, even, you know, if maybe the question is a little bit less relevant because we're already here, but I think it can certainly imbue our choice to live here with much meaning and purpose and depth. And so that's my goal this morning in looking together with you at this subject. So we'll begin with a very famous midrash, which appears here in source number one, and it's an important midrash, as we'll see in a few moments, because it's cited by the Ramban. Now, the midrash describes Ma'aseh Rabbi Yudah ben Beteirav, Rabbi Matya ben Cheresh, Rabbi Chananya ben Achi, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yonatan, all these great sages. Shayu yotzim chutz la'aretz. They left the land of Israel, perhaps heading towards Bavel. V'higiu lefaltum, and they came to this place called Faltum. V'zichru et Eretz Yisrael, and they remembered the land of Israel. Zakfu einehem v'zalgud moteyem v'karu v'gdeyhem. They began to weep and cry and rend their garments as a sign of mourning. V'karu et ha-mikra hazeh, and they read this verse. V'yirashtem otah v'yishavtem ba u'shmartem la'asot et kol ha-chukim ha'eileh. You will possess the land and dwell in it and observe all of these laws and statutes. Amru, and they said, look where I've underlined this, is important. Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael shkula k'neged kol ha-mitzot shebetorah. Settling in the land of Israel, living in the land of Israel, is equated with all of the other mitzvot in the Torah. Okay, I think that ends our discussion here this morning. Have a wonderful day. Here you see, not only is it a mitzvah, but the Medrash says that it's a mitzvah that is equal to all the other mitzvot in the Torah. Okay. And then the Midrash continues with a similar episode with different rabbis, Maaseh, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, Rabbi Yochanan, Hasandlar, etc. And they went to Nitzivim, which was the home of Rabbi Yudah ben Beteira, to learn Torah from him. That was outside of the land of Israel. And again, they remembered the land of Israel, the Midrash says, and they began to cry and weep and mourn and rend their garments. And they called out and recalled this pasuk, invoked this pasuk again, and they said, Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvot shebetorah. Once again, settling or dwelling in the land of Israel is equivalent to all the other mitzvot in the Torah. And then this account ends, this version ends. What did they do? Chazru uba'u lahem le'Eretz Yisrael. They went back. They went back. Okay, now as I said, this is an important midrash. We'll see in a moment. It's cited by the Ramban. Here in source number two is a famous passage of the Ramban. It's an important passage. It comes from his Hasagot to the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. The Rambam, of course, the Nesher HaGadol, the Great Eagle, among the many monumental works that he penned, was the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he counts up and describes all of the 613 mitzvot. Well, at least all the 613 mitzvot according to him. Right, if you look through the Torah and the Talmud, rabbinic literature, you'll see it's actually a hard feat to winnow or whittle the Taryag Mitzvot down to 613. I mean, how can you take all the Mitzvot HaTorah with all of their details and particulars and try and whittle them down to 613? But the Rambam and others do. The Rambam was not the first to do so, but the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot is a monumental work. However, the Ramban takes him to task for leaving out a few. The Ramban says, hey, Rambam, Maimonides, you left out a few. You should have counted this. Okay. And the fourth mitzvah, where the Ramban feels that the Rambam left something out, here in source number two, is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban writes the following, where I've underlined. Mitzvah revi'it, shinitzdavinu lareshet ha'aretz, asher natan hakel yidbarach, v'italel lavotenu, lavram yitzchak, uliyakov, v'lo ne'ezva biyad zulatenu, min ha'umot, olishmama. The fourth positive mitzvah, where the Ramban says that the Rambam did not count it, is a mitzvah to dwell in the land of Israel, to possess the land that God gave to our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and not to abandon that land and leave it in someone else's hands, one of the other nations, or let it desolate. Okay? V'hu amru lahem, and he cites this pasuk that we'll read shortly in Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Gimel, v'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba. You're supposed to possess the land and dwell in it. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz lareshet ota. For I have given you this land to possess, Hashem says. V'hit nachaltem et ha'aretz, and you shall settle the land. Okay. V'nichpal kezeh enyan b'mitzvah zo b'mekumot acherim kamru yidbarach. Bo'u urushu et ha'aretz asher nishbati lavoteichem. And the Rabban continues and says that this mitzvah is also found in other psukim in the Torah. It's repeated. It's formulated in different ways throughout the Torah. A pasuk in Dvarim Aleph. The Ramban cites here, Bo'u urushu et ha'aretz. Come and possess the land that I have sworn to your forefathers. And the Ramban, in his Perush al HaTorah, also in different places cites different psukim which refer to this mitzvah, which the Ramban feels is a positive commandment applicable at all times upon each and every individual. And that he writes here towards the bottom, because as we'll see in a few moments, there are those who are of the opinion that maybe once upon a time there was a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, when we first entered into the land, but there is no longer a mitzvah. No. The Ramban feels that there is a constant mitzvah, a mitzvah which applies at all times to settle the land of Israel, to dwell in the land of Israel, to take the land, to possess it, to ensure that it's not in the hands of any other nation, to ensure that it's not left desolate. And he believes this mitzvah applies to each and every individual. We might not get into it this morning, but there are those who are of the opinion that maybe the mitzvah applies to the nation, the mitzvah applies when there is a king, but maybe not to each and every individual, maybe not at all times. But take a look where I've underlined at the bottom. The Ramban writes, "Im kein hi mitzvat aseh ledorot." This is a positive commandment for all generations. Mitchayev kol yachid mimenu. It's incumbent upon every individual. Each individual is obligated in this mitzvah. Afilu bizman galut, and even at a time of exile, because as we'll see, there are those who are of the opinion that when the Jewish people are in exile, the mitzvah no longer applies. Ke'adu b'talmud b'mekomot harbeh, as is described in the Talmud, as is known from the Talmud in many different places. Now, okay, there are different ways maybe of interpreting these Talmudic passages, but for the Ramban, it's obvious that this mitzvah applies at all times to each and every individual. V'lashon sifrei, and then he continues and quotes the sifrei that we began with, that famous midrash, okay, and then ends like the midrash says that Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael Shkula Keneged Kol HaMitzvot Shebetorah. Citing the midrash, he says that dwelling in the land of Israel, settling in the land of Israel, is a mitzvah that is equated with all the other mitzvot in the Torah. Okay. These rabbis that are talking, these rabbis that are leaving Eretz Yisrael and that are reflecting upon their choice to leave Eretz Yisrael. And they're speaking to one another. Amru, they said, meaning they said to one another. Okay, right? You could interpret it maybe then based on that episode and how they reacted. Amru, the sages, maybe other sages said. But I think the simple pshat is that they themselves said.
Like many years ago when I worked in the Canadian government, when you said they say or it is said, it was a way of avoiding your own responsibility.
Right. No, that's just a style that is very common in the Gemara, in the Midrash, in rabbinic literature. Okay, fine. So, the Ramban here, as I mentioned, criticizes the Rambam for not counting the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in his Taryag Mitzvot. And the question is, how is that possible? Right? The Nesher HaGadol, the Rambam, right? How can we let him get away with such a thing? So much ink has been spilled trying to reconcile how the Rambam seemingly or apparently does not include the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in his count of the Taryag in his Sefer HaMitzvot. One of the famous answers is that of Rabbi Chaim Ben Venisti in his work Knesset HaGdolah to Yoredeya, and he writes that maybe according to the Rambam, the mitzvah to settle the land of Israel today is only rabbinic in nature. It's only midrabanan. In his Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam records those mitzvot that are minat Torah, the Taryag mitzvot, the 613 biblical mitzvot. But maybe according to the Rambam, nowadays it's only midrabanan. In the days of Yehoshua, when they entered into the land, Then, according to the Rambam, it was min haTorah. But for the Dorot, for future generations, nowadays it's only midrabanan. So that's one famous answer. Another famous answer, which is based on the three oaths, which is something that we'll get to a little later on this morning. Very, very difficult passage at the end of Masechet Ketubot, which based on verses in Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, Hishbati etchem benot Yerushalayim, I've adjured you, O maidens of Jerusalem. Okay, maybe there's a prohibition to come back to the land of Israel and take it by force, take it en masse, take it like a wall, in the language of the Talmud, we'll see. And based on that, the Megillat Esther, when I say Megillat Esther, I don't mean the Megillah that we read on Purim. This is a work of Rabbi Yitzchak de Leon, who named his work for his mother, whose name was Esther. Okay, so he tries to explain, again, why the Rambam does not include this mitzvah, this essential, important, precious mitzvah in his Sefer HaMitzvot. He says, well, maybe we're not permitted nowadays, since we are in Galut, to return to the land en masse, so this mitzvah no longer applies. And again, it's based on the three oaths. Now, it's difficult. This explanation is challenging because the Rambam includes many mitzvot which seemingly do not apply nowadays. So many mitzvot related to the Beit HaMikdash and the Korbanot, things that we do not have today. And yet, that doesn't seem to bother Rabbi Yitzchak de Leon. But because there's a passage in the Talmud which suggests that maybe nowadays we are prohibited to return to the land and take it by force, we'll see that's not really a prohibition. But, l'chora, at least seemingly, maybe there is such a question. So he wants to say that since we are in Galut, this mitzvah no longer applies and will not apply, again, according to the Rambam, until the arrival of the Mashiach. When the Mashiach comes, yes, then we will be able to fulfill this mitzvah again, but in the meanwhile, it's not applicable. And that's why, he explains, the Rambam does not count it in his Sefer HaMitzvot. But again, very difficult, very challenging, as the Rambam includes in the Sefer HaMitzvot many mitzvot, which seemingly do not apply nowadays. Okay? So if you take a look here at source number 7, we're not going to look at this whole tshuva together. This is only a section of the tshuva, famous tshuva from the Avnei Nezer, Rabbi Avraham Borenstein of Sokotchev, who was both a Hasidish Rebbe, Sokotchev Rebbe, also a major posek, and he has a lot of wonderful and amazing chidushim. But one of the things he says here is that we find often that the Rambam and the Ramban have two different approaches as to how they count mitzvot. The Rambam will often count other mitzvot inside of a larger, more general mitzvah, where the Ramban counts up things individually. Okay, so they have two different approaches on how they count up the Taryag mitzvot, and he gives examples, and therefore he concludes that the Rambam does indeed believe there is a mitzvah to settle in the land of Israel. The Rambam does indeed believe there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel that applies today. However, he counts it in a different mitzvah. It's included in the mitzvah of Hacharem Tacharimim, the mitzvah to rid the land of its inhabitants, to wage war against the Canaanite nations who have control over the land of Israel. And so the Rambam, according to the Avnei Nezer, did not see fit to include a separate mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael because he includes it in this larger mitzvah of Hacharim Tacharimim. Part of possessing the land and dwelling in the land and settling in the land and living in the land is first ridding the land of its inhabitants. You can't settle the land if you've got Canaanite nations making your lives miserable. Okay, so that's how the Avnei Nezer reconciles this and believes that no, the Rambam does believe there is a mitzvah, min haTorah, a biblical mitzvah which applies even nowadays. In a similar vein, Rav Shaul Yisraeli in his Sefer Eretz Chemda writes that the Rambam includes the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz in a different mitzvah, the mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon, which we know is very much tied up into the land, right? We're supposed to eat and be satisfied and thank Hashem for this incredible land that he had given us. So that's his approach. Again, seeing that the Rambam does indeed include it. However, it's inside of another mitzvah. Rosh Hechter from Yeshiva University also similarly believes that the Rambam holds there's a mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz which applies nowadays. However, it's included in the mitzvah to appoint a king. Again, it's also related to this concept of having a king and waging war against the other nations and dwelling in the land and settling land is part of the mitzvah to appoint a king, according to Rav Shechter. And we'll see there are certain areas of halacha, certain mitzvot, that would seem to give expression to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that the Rambam himself records. Okay? So take a look here at source number 3. This is a Mishnah from the very end of Masechet Ketubot, and the Mishnah begins, Hakol ma'alin le'eretz Yisrael, ve'ein hakol motzi'in. All can compel another to come up to the land of Israel, but no one can compel them to leave. No one can force them to leave. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, so this is actually a Mishnah that is speaking about divorce. And the Mishnah here is teaching that one may compel his or her spouse to ascend to the land of Israel, but no one can compel their spouse to leave. Okay? And the Gemara, here in source number 4, explains that refusal to comply is grounds for divorce, and in such a case, the compensation stipulated in the ketubah is forfeited by the offending party. Okay? In other words, if he wants to come on Aliyah and she refuses, the Beit Din can force her to come. If she still refuses, so then she does not get the money promised to her in her ketubah. Okay, because she's in the wrong. She's violating a mitzvah. She's in violation of, and this is just one example. There are many examples of where if one of the parties is in violation of a mitzvah, so again, they forfeit the ketubah. And the opposite case is true, that if she wants to come on Aliyah, and he refuses, she can go to the Beit Din and compel him to make Aliyah. And if he still refuses, then she gets her ketubah. She gets the money stipulated in the ketubah. Okay? So the compensation stipulated in the ketubah is forfeited by the offending party because they're in violation of a mitzvah. And this is also extended, by the way, in the Gemara to even moving to a lesser quality home. Okay? So you can imagine, person doesn't want to leave their 5-bedroom, beautiful home in the 5 towns with a 2-car garage to come on Aliyah, right, and move to a small, cramped apartment in Yerushalayim. No, so the Gemara even addresses that issue as well because this is a major mitzvah, okay, and the reason why the halacha sides again with the party who wants to move to Eretz Yisrael is because of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So it gives expression to the fact that there indeed is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And if you look here in source number 5, this is the Rambam in Ilchot Ishut, the Rambam paskins this way. The Rambam rules in accord with this Mishnah and this Gemara at the end of Masechet Ketubot. So anyone who suggests that the Rambam did not believe that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael because he leaves it out of his count of the Taryag in Sefer HaMitzvot, need only open to the Hilchot Yishut in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah to see that indeed the Rambam rules this way, as does the Shulchan Aruch, by the way, in Evan HaEzer, Siman Ayin Hey, here in source number 6. If you're just joining us, there's some source sheets if you'd like. Okay. Now, there are other mitzvot as well. For instance, this concept, this Mishnah that we saw, Hakol Ma'alin Le'eretz Yisrael Ve'en Hakol Motzin, applies to Avadim as well. There's a discussion in the Rishonim if this is an Eved Ivri or even an Eved Knani, but if a servant wants to move to the land of Israel, he can compel his master. Okay? And if the master refuses, the servant is set free. Okay? It's incredible. The servant is set free. Why? Because he's obligated to keep a servant, even an Eved Kenani, is obligated to keep all of the mitzvot that a woman keeps, the mitzvot aseh, shehazman grama, he's exempt from, just like a woman, but he's obligated to keep other mitzvot. And women are obligated to keep this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Ran writes, quoting the Ravid, in the Ran's commentary on the Rif there, at the end of Masechet Ketubot, right? So the Ran holds that Avadim are obligated just like women in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. If the master, by the way, wants to leave, right? Ein hakol motzin. The master wants to leave. The Mishnah said, as we saw, you can't compel someone else to leave. So the master wants to move to New York. The slave can say, I'm sorry, I want to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Can't compel him. And he's freed rather than being sold into slavery outside of the land of Israel. And this is an incredible halacha. Should the Eved run away from his master to Eretz Yisrael? You have an Eved who's a big Tzioni. He's a big Zionist. Okay? He's living in Bavel, or he's living in New York, or Los Angeles, or Miami, Florida, wherever he is. And he gets on a plane, he runs to Eretz Yisrael, he runs away, he's not returned. Okay? And here, the Rambam in Hilchot Avadim, in the 8th Perek, writes, again, the very same Rambam, which curiously leaves out the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael from his count of the Tayag in the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam adds that these halachot are applicable at all times, even when the land of Israel is not under Jewish sovereignty. So you see that, of course, the Rambam believes there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because these mitzvot, again, give expression to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. They are based on the concept that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah that applies nowadays. Another mitzvah which gives expression to this is the mitzvah, or really the isur, of Amira la'akum on Shabbat. You're not allowed to ask a Gentile to do work for you on Shabbat. Okay, you're not allowed to benefit from the work that a Gentile does explicitly for you on Shabbat. And there are different reasons why that is, but the Gemara has an exception to the rule. And this is a Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Gittin and Dafchet over there, where the Gemara says that if it's to purchase land here in the land of Israel, in that case, it is permitted to have a Gentile write up a contract for you or sign a contract for you. And Tosfot there emphasizes that this heter, this leniency, is because of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because of the great significance of the mitzvah. And the Rambam paskins this way as well. So again, it's clear that the Rambam believed there was a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. By the way, the Talmud Yerushalmi, Tamoid Katan, compares this to the acquisition of the land of Israel during the conquest of Jericho. When Yoshua and the Bnei Israel enter into the land of Israel, their first battle is against the city of Jericho. Remember, the walls of Jericho fall, right? And that took place on Shabbat. So what the Talmud Yerushalmi does, very interestingly, makes a connection between that, how they took the land on Shabbat, right? They took Jericho on Shabbat, and compares that to this leniency of writing a contract on Shabbat. Okay, there are other halachot which give expression to this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. For instance, typically you're not allowed to travel on Fridays, okay, lest one come to desecrate the Sabbath. Mechalel Shabbat is Gemara and Shabbat Daf Yud Tet. And even nowadays, it's a good idea if you're traveling on Friday not to leave too late. I'll never fly on a Friday. I'll always fly on a Wednesday, Thursday. If you know what's going on in the airport, certainly it's a good idea. You know, certainly I wouldn't fly internationally. Can't really fly internationally on a Friday. Maybe if it's a very short flight. But even within the United States, if I have to be somewhere for Shabbat, I won't take a plane on Friday. Just too stressful. I don't want to chance it. But the sage is prohibited leaving on Friday unless the Shulchan Aruch records that if you're leaving to Eretz Yisrael and you are part of a caravan, a shayara, then it's permitted. Okay, you're traveling with other people. At the time, it was difficult to travel. It was dangerous to travel, so you wanted to travel with other people. So again, there's a heter on Shabbat, or on really Erev Shabbat, but again, based on this idea of the fact that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which overrides this prohibition to leaving on Erev Shabbat. And the Magen Avraham there, in his comments to the Shulchan Aruch, it's Orach Chaim Reish Mem Chet. The Magen Avraham extends this even to someone who leaves with the intent of returning. In other words, let's say he's not settling there permanently, dwelling in Israel permanently. He's going on vacation. He's going for a period of time. He's planning on coming back. But as the Gemara says, that in the Medrash, different places, even walking four amot in Eretz Yisrael, it's a sign that one is a ben olam haba. It's a sign that you have a share in the world to come. So the Magen Avraham says, you see, it's a mitzvah even to walk dalet amot. There are people who, you know, they really believe this. Every four amot I walk. So, you know, if your bus is late and you decide to walk, right, instead of waiting for the bus, according to some, it's a mitzvah. Okay? Other areas, kibur avaim, for instance, is a whole question in the poskim, already in the Rishonim, if it's permitted to make aliyah against your parents' wishes. And this is very relevant. Halacha l'maaseh. I've had this question many times from students who come and study in Israel, and then they decide they want to move here. You can't blame them. I mean, you know, they come here and they fall in love with the land. You can't blame them. It's contagious. But what if their parents don't want them to live here in Israel, don't want them to make aliyah? Now, as important as the mitzvah of kibur av ve'em is, and it's one of the Aseret HaDibrot, one of the Ten Commandments, it's in the Decalogue, but nevertheless, if a parent tells you to violate a mitzvah in the Torah, you are not to listen to that parent, right? So what if they tell you not to make aliyah? So if Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not a mitzvah, so then you have to listen to your parents. But if Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah in the Torah, so then maybe you shouldn't listen to such a parent in such a case. Interesting. So the Maharami Rodenberg, one of the great Rishonim, Paskin this way. And he said that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael takes precedence over Kibur Av Ve'em. Okay? He writes this in a tshuva, and you find similar rulings in the tshuvot of Rav Moshe Ditrani and contemporary poskim like Rav Avadi Yosef. Okay? This, you know, some questions, some rule that, well, you can only leave for Kibur Av Ve'em if you intend to come back, right, on condition that you return. But in any case, according to many poskim, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah, and so therefore it trumps Kibur Av Ve'em in such a case. All right, there are, just one more example. You have 30 days to put up a mezuzah in your home in Chutz La'aretz. But here, you have to affix a mezuzah to your doorpost immediately. Why? So the Gemara Menachot and Daf Mem Dalet says, because of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because it's permanent. You see, life in Chutz La'aretz is temporary. Right? Hopefully, we'll all return home very soon. The Galut is temporary. Okay, so your domicile there, even if you got a mortgage or you bought a home in cash, you built a home, but it's temporary. Here it's permanent, so here you have to put the mezuzah up right away. Okay, so just a few examples of mitzvot that give expression to the fact that there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and that impacts on this discussion about why the Rambam seemingly doesn't include this mitzvah in his Taryag, in his count. The answer is he really does. Either he includes it in one of the other mitzvot, as we saw, as suggested by the Avnei Nezer and the Eretz Chemden, Rav Shechter, right? Or, for whatever reason, he didn't count it explicitly. I'll show you in a moment what I believe to be the most compelling of the explanations given. But you see that the Rambam paskins in many areas of halacha that a spouse can compel his or her spouse to make aliyah, and an eved can compel his master, or a master can compel his eved, etc. So you see, it's clear that the Rambam believed that there was a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So one explanation, which I find to be the most compelling, as to why the Rambam seemingly leaves out the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael from his count of the Taryag, is really based on something the Rambam himself writes in the introduction to his Sefer HaMitzvot, here in source number 8, where the Rambam gives the rules of why he's going to count a mitzvah, why he's going to leave it out again. If you examine the Torah and all of the Talmudic literature, all of rabbinic literature, very hard to whittle all of our mitzvot down to only 613. So the Rambam, in the first few chapters of his Sefer HaMitzvot, his first few Shorashim, his introduction, so to speak, he gives you his rules by which he's going to operate. Okay? When he's going to count something, when he's not going to count something. And One of the things he says is that if a mitzvah is so basic, is so fundamental, if it's a mitzvah that everything else is built upon, that everything else is based upon, it need not be counted. And so he writes here, in source number 8, Hashoresh harevi'i she'ein ra'ui lemanot et sivuyim ha'kolalim ha'torah kula. It's not fitting, or a better translation, it's not necessary to count as one of the tariag mitzvot a mitzvah that includes the entire Torah, kol ha'torah kula. What he's saying is, if a mitzvah is so basic, it need not be counted. Everything else is built upon it. I mean, is there a mitzvah to breathe? The Torah doesn't have to tell you to breathe. It's so basic. It's so fundamental. And so in a similar vein, what the Rambam is saying is that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is so basic. It's so fundamental. It's so essential. It's so central, it need not be counted. It's something that all the other mitzvot are based on. Now, he doesn't say that explicitly, but that's what many poskim like the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Shlomo Gorin and Rav Kook and many others explained that this is the shita of the Rambam. This is why the Rambam seemingly excludes the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael from his Sefer HaMitzvot, doesn't count it as one of the Taryag, because of how central it is, because of how basic or fundamental it is, it need not be counted. Okay? I mean, it's so basic. And we'll come back to this idea, but, you know, 202 of our 613 mitzvot can only be performed on this soil. Two-thirds of the Talmud deal with mitzvot that are connected to the land of Israel. That's how basic the land of Israel is. It is the place where the Torah is supposed to be performed, with the mitzvot HaTorah are supposed to be performed. This is where the Torah lives and breathes in its natural habitat. So it's not that the Rambam chose not to include it in the Taryag because he didn't believe that the mitzvah was applicable nowadays, or he didn't believe there was such a mitzvah. No, no, no. Maybe he didn't include it because of just how basic the mitzvah is, how fundamental, how essential, how central it is. Okay. Now there's one more shita that I'd like to look together with you at, this morning, and that's the Shita of Tosafot, here in source number 10. Right? Now, remember, we said that the Mishnah at the end of Masechet Ketubot, the Gemara there explains that if one party, one spouse wants to go on Aliyah, he or she can compel the other to come and move, and if one wants to leave, they cannot compel the other to leave Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And in doing so, they would forfeit the ketubah, as we explained. They are in the wrong for wanting to leave or not wanting to make aliyah. So Tosfot there has a comment here in source number 10, where Tosfot writes, Eino noheg bizman hazeh, that this halacha does not apply nowadays. This halacha of a spouse compelling the other spouse to make aliyah, or how a spouse cannot compel the other. Hakol ma'alin ve'ein hakol motzin. Tosfot records an opinion that this does not apply nowadays. Okay, why? De'ika sakanat derachim, because the roads are dangerous. It's too difficult to travel. Right, in medieval Europe, the Balei HaTosafot living in France and Germany in the 12th century, 13th century, later Balei HaTosafot, too difficult, too dangerous to travel to the land of Israel. V'haya omer Rabbeinu Chaim, and here he quotes Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen, De'achshav eino mitzvah ladur be'eretz Yisrael, ki yesh kama mitzvah tatilet ba'aretz, v'kama onshin, de'ein anu yicholim lizaher behem, v'lamod alehem. He cites another one of the Balei HaTosafot. Now, you know, the Tosafot were just collection here, the commentary of the Tosafot on the Talmud is a collection of many different opinions, many different Balei HaTosafot. So another one of the Balei HaTosafot says that, yeah, it doesn't apply nowadays. You know why? Because it's so difficult to observe the mitzvot hatzliot ba'aretz, the agricultural laws. Trumot, ma'asrot, right? This year is a Shemitah year. too difficult to observe Shemitah. What are you going to do? Right? This is before the Heter Mechira, which we've spoken about in the past, which was created in advance of that Shemitah year, 1888-1889, right, when you had religious farmers coming from Eastern Europe to Israel to settle and create these religious agricultural settlements. But here, Chaim Cohen, not your neighbor Chaim Cohen, one of the Balei HaTosafot, says that it's too difficult, and the punishment for these things is serious and severe, and we're not able to follow these laws. So what do you do? What do you do? Okay. And yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. So, first of all, you know, many later poskim took issue with this comment of Tosfot here. And the Maharit, for instance, in a tshuva to Yoredei, as well as in his commentary on the Gemara, he dismisses this entire comment as an addition of an errant student, a Talmid To'eh. In other words, you can't take it seriously. This is something that kind of crept into the manuscripts. It's not a valid opinion, and dismisses it entirely. Okay. The Pitchei Tshuva, which maybe we'll come back to in a few moments, explains that this comment of Tosfot reflects a dat yachid, a minority opinion. You know, in halacha, you've got the majority, and then sometimes you have a minority opinion. We don't always paskin like that opinion, right? They're all different opinions, right? So the Pitchei Tshuva says, yes, this is a true comment of the Balei HaTosafot, but we don't follow that opinion. We don't rule in accord with that opinion. It's a dat yachid, okay? But you can ask a question. Wait a minute. So the rabbis of the Gemara, right? The rabbis of the Mishnah and the Gemara, they were not concerned about travel in their day. Were the roads any less dangerous when they said Hakol Ma'alin Ve'en Hakol Motzin? Was it any easier for them to observe the agricultural laws? So in a tshuva of the Avnei Nezer, we mentioned the Avnei Nezer. So in a tshuva, the Avnei Nezer writes that long tshuva on the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We already saw part of it here in source number 7. He writes that nowadays we're not to be concerned with these concerns of the Tosfot. Even if you say that it's a valid opinion, even if you say that it's not a dat yachid, it's a Tosfot. We have to give weight to the opinion of the Balei HaTosafot. But nevertheless, the Avnei Nezer, in his famous tshuva about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, writes that these concerns, the danger of travel and the observance of the agricultural laws, mitzvot atzilut ha'aretz, are no longer a valid concern. And he's writing in the 19th century, okay? All the more so nowadays, these things are less of a concern, right? All the more so today when travel to Israel is safe and easy. And yes, while there are different opinions with regards to Shemitah, right? Heter Mechira, Yivul Chul, Yivul Nochri, Otsar Beit Din, we spoke about these things in the past. But yeah, we have the chief rabbinate, the nowadays other Hashgachot, okay? So if the Avnei Nezer was not concerned in the 19th century, all the more so, these concerns are not really valid nowadays. Okay, there are other explanations of Tosfot, but just to move on, we saw together this morning the Shitot of the Ramban, the Rambam, Tosafot. Okay, by the way, we didn't have time, but the Rambam, just for homework, you could take a look at source number 9 in the 5th chapter of Hilchot Malachim. Again, for anyone who suggests that the Rambam doesn't hold as a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, in his Mishnah Torah, in his major code of Jewish law, the Rambam records all of these things from the end of Gemara and Ketubot, how it's prohibited to leave Eretz Yisrael for Chutz La'aretz, and how it's better to live in a city in Eretz Yisrael whose majority are non-Jews. Right here in Halacha Yud Bet, Le'olam Yidor Adam Be'eretz Yisrael Afilu Be'ir Shuruba Akum. Better to live in a city in Israel whose majority are not Jews, rather than live in a city in Chutz La'aretz with a Jewish majority. It's a Gemara at the end of Masechet Ketubot, right? Like, what does that mean? A city in Chutz La'aretz with a Jewish majority? Peirush Rashi, Brooklyn or something, right? Flatbush, Borough Park, whatever. So, And the Rambam records from the end of, he cites the end of Masechet Ketubot, how the sages would come to the land of Israel and roll around in her dust and kiss the ground and kiss the rocks, and he brings it down la'alacha. Okay? But we answered for the Rambam. We saw a few different opinions. In any case, these are the shitot of the Ramban, the Rambam, and the Balei HaTosafot, with all the different back and forth. How do you reconcile them? I mentioned the Pitchei Tshuva in his comment to the Evin HaEzer, Ayin He, on this halacha, how a spouse can compel one another. So the Pitchei Tshuva there writes, it's not just the Ramban who holds that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that applies at all times, even nowadays when we are in Galut, and applies to each and every individual, but he records that many poskim over the centuries also held that way. You know, it's a big fallacy that people think, wow, it's only the Ramban, you know. Yeah, only the Ramban holds that the mitzvah applies nowadays. As we saw, according to many, even the Rambam holds that way. Okay, but as the Pitchei Tshuva mentions, many, many other significant authorities, many other important authorities, many other poskim throughout the centuries, paskin that there's a mitzvah to dwell in the land of Israel, to live in the land of Israel, which applies nowadays, applies at all times, even when we are in exile, and applies to each and every individual. Okay, so it's a fallacy. I remember once seeing in an elevator in a building in Har Nof. I live in Har Nof. And someone put up a sticker in the elevator, right? Only in Israel they put stickers in elevators. And only in Israel do those stickers stay up for years. So someone put up a sticker which said it was a tefillah to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Right? A tefillah, Hashem, you know, I should merit in fulfilling this mitzvah of dwelling in the land of Israel, of settling the land of Israel, of living in Israel. And then someone, and only in Israel, this is the type of graffiti you have in Har Nof, only in Israel would someone write in pen underneath the sticker, Lefi data Ramban, right? According to the opinion of the Ramban. In other words, yeah, maybe according to the opinion of the Ramban, there's a mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but according to others, there's not. Okay. That's the kind of graffiti you have in Har Nof, this Lumdisha graffiti. But in any case, that's a fallacy. Okay, many, many other poskim throughout the centuries believe that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which applies at all times. Now, one of the things that we touched on, okay, here in source number 11, the three oaths. The three oaths. Very, very, very controversial. We won't have time to get into it in too much detail, but very important because, as I said, the Megillat Esther, in trying to reconcile why the Rambam seemingly leaves out a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael from his count of the Taryag in his Sefer HaMitzvot, he cites the three oaths and says, well, maybe the mitzvah does not apply nowadays when we are in Galut, when we are in exile. Maybe the mitzvah will only apply when we are redeemed, when the Mashiach comes, right? And then the Rambam will add it to his Sefer HaMitzvot, right? In other words, in accounting for why the Rambam seemingly leaves it out, he says, yeah, the Rambam doesn't believe it's applicable nowadays because we are in Galut, and there is this concept of the three oaths. So he's really the first one to invoke the three oaths as something of significance, as something that's binding. But later on, as you all know, historically, the anti-Zionists, the Satmar Rebbe, the Munkacs Rebbe, and others would invoke the three oaths to say, we have no right to build a state here in the land of Israel. We have no right to move here en masse, to wage war in order to claim this land. This was a reaction against Zionism. Now, first of all, you have to, I think, appreciate the, let's call it the social historical background in which these views were espoused, okay, or a social and political climate. The religious community in Europe, they were hemorrhaging young people to all the isms of the Enlightenment, of emancipation, of the modern period, right? Marxism, socialism, communism, Zionism, okay? And so the Zionist movement was viewed really as a threat. And so part of his theology against Zionism, the Satmar Rebbe wrote really two svarim. First, his Vayol Moshe, and then Al HaGeulah, Al HaTmura after the Six-Day War. But the Satmar Rebbe he bases his argument, one of his major arguments against the Zionist movement and against the founding of the State of Israel, which he believes to be a breach of halacha, he bases it on the three oaths. What are the three oaths? Okay? So here, in source number 11, here's this passage from the end of Masechet Ketubot, which again discusses the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, discusses how a spouse can compel his or her spouse, as we mentioned, and has all sorts of wonderful praises for living in the land of Israel and how it's so important, and that brayta of how it's better to live in a city whose majority are non-Jews in Israel versus a city whose majority is Jewish outside the land, as we said, as the Rambam records, right? All these beautiful praises of even being buried in the land of Israel. So there you have the three oaths. And they're based on psukim in Shir HaShirim. Hishbati etchem benot Yerushalayim. I've adjured you, O maidens of Jerusalem. I've caused you to swear. Right? So what are these swears? So take a look at source number 11. Gimel shvuot halalu lema. What are these three oaths? Achat shelo yalu Yisrael bachoma. The first is that Israel not come bachoma, like a wall, kachoma. Okay, some explain different versions. Bachoma, kachoma. We not come like a wall. What does that mean? What does it mean to come like a wall? Maybe to come a mass immigration to Israel, come en masse, come by force to wage war. Okay, good. Another oath, second oath, that we're not allowed to rebel against the nations of the world, while we are in exile. Okay? The achat, and the third, Sheishbiya Kodesh Baruch Hu, et ha'ovdei kochavim shelo yishdabdu behen b'Yisrael yoter midai. And the third is that the non-Jews are not allowed to persecute us too much. Now, of course, you can ask, well, did they keep their side of the bargain? And in fact, the three oaths have been refuted many different times in many different ways. You've got entire articles devoted to refuting the three oaths. You have entire books devoted to refuting the three oaths, how they're not applicable. Okay? Now, but one suggestion is, and the Shita Mekubetzet is the first one to raise this even, that since they didn't keep their side of the bargain, oh, we don't have to keep our side of the bargain. There's actually a halacha in making deals, let's say. There's a halacha in the Yoredeya that if two parties take an oath and one party doesn't keep his side of the bargain, the other party doesn't have to keep their side of the bargain. Okay, so you could say they were made to swear not to persecute us. Well, you know, all the persecution, torment, and humiliation that the Jewish people have suffered and endured for centuries certainly would free us from any obligation. Okay? And the Tzitz Eliezer writes this as well. Another explanation is that maybe they no longer apply because they were already, the oaths were already abolished, made batel u'mevutal during the Second Commonwealth, with the restoration of the Jewish people and the building of the Second Temple in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, with the return to Zion, the Shivat Zion in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, or that the concept of the three oaths here, they're not binding if we receive permission from the nations of the world. Just like, right, some say that the oaths were limited to that specific time, and once Cyrus, Koresh, we've spoken about him in the past, gave the Jewish people permission to come back to the land of Israel and build their holy temple. Not only does he give them permission, he encourages them. The beginning of Sefer Ezra and the end of Sefer Divrei Hayamim. Okay, so yeah, you could say that we received permission. We didn't come by force. We didn't come like a wall. We came with permission of the nations of the world, whether it's the Balfour Declaration of 1917 or the San Remo Conference of 1920 or the Partition Plan Chavtet B'November 1947. Okay, that demonstrated the world's acquiescence in restoring a state, in returning to our land. Okay, but I think perhaps the most compelling refutation of the three oaths as binding is the fact that they were never accepted as halacha. If you take a look at the Rishonim, at the Achronim, all of our poskim, no one brings it down la halacha. You're not allowed to come by force. First of all, if you want to say that coming like a wall means coming en masse. So we never came en masse. We trickled in, right? And we continue to trickle in. But you know, hopefully we'll see a mass aliyah soon, right? Hopefully it will be one of choice, of ideals and ideology, running towards something as opposed to running from something. That's never good. But none of the poskim, I think this is so compelling, none of the poskim ever brought this down l'halacha. In other words, it's very possible this whole passage about the three oaths is merely agadah. It's some sort of idea, some sort of message, some sort of homily, some sort of philosophical concept, whatever it means, right? And you see the ones involved in the three oaths, they themselves violated the three oaths in their midrashim. You see that even in rabbinic literature, they didn't listen to the three oaths, it would seem. But none of the poskim ever brought down the three oaths l'halacha. Even the Megillat Esther, he uses the three oaths to explain why the Rambam leaves out the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael from his count of the 613 mitzvot in the Sefer HaMitzvot. He leaves it out of his count of the Tayyak. But again, it doesn't bring it down l'halacha. Okay? So I think that's very compelling that none of the major Rishonim bring this down l'halacha. So I think that you can make a good case that these three oaths are not binding, and they never were binding. Okay, and there's more to say about that, but we're almost out of time. I just want to explore the nature of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We looked at a few different opinions, different shitot in the Rishonim. So, while many, as we mentioned, conclude that there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which applies at all times, some question the nature of the mitzvah. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva in the first chelek of Igrot Moshe to Evan Ha'ezer, the first chelek of the Evan Ezer and his Igrot Moshe, where he explores the nature of the mitzvah to settle in the land of Israel. And based on the Tosfot that we saw that suggests that maybe nowadays, because of either dangerous roads, the dangers of travel, or the difficulty in observing the agricultural laws, the mitzvot tzatzilut ba'aretz, maybe the mitzvah doesn't apply nowadays. He takes that into consideration. And also in trying to grapple with the fact that throughout the centuries, you have many great gedolim who did not make aliyah, who did not move to Israel. So Rav Moshe questions the nature of the mitzvah. And he says, well, yes, maybe there indeed is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He says, maybe it's not a chovah, maybe it's not an obligation. Sometimes, and this is a little lumdish, right? Something very, very brisker. Sometimes we say that it's a mitzvah, but it's not a chovah, right? In other words, if you do it, if you fulfill it, right, you get a mitzvah, right? You get zchut, you get credit, you get merit. It's meritorious. You fulfill a mitzvah. There's a kiyum ha-mitzvah, right? You fulfill a mitzvah for doing it. However, it's not incumbent on each and every individual. It's not obligatory. And the briskers make a distinction between a mitzvah chiyuvis and a mitzvah kiyumis. There's a chiyuv or a chova, an obligation, and then there's a type of mitzvah that's not obligatory, but if you do it, you get a mitzvah. It's, for instance, like the Rav Moshe here in this tshuva compares it to the mitzvah of tzitzit. Right? The mitzvah of tzitzit, we just had it in Parshat Shlach, the very end of the parasha, we read on Shabbat. The mitzvah tzitzit only applies if you're wearing a four-cornered garment. What if you're not wearing a four-cornered garment, right? So there's no mitzvah to wear tzitzit. So there's no obligation on the individual to wear tzitzit unless he's wearing a four-cornered garment. But if he goes ahead and puts on a four-cornered garment with tzitzit, so then he gets a mitzvah. Okay, everyone understand the distinction? So yeah, you could say, look, this is lomdis, this is pilpul, but that's how Rav Moshe explains the nature of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yes, he says it indeed is a mitzvah, but it's not an obligation. It's not a chovah incumbent upon each and every individual. Okay, nowadays. And as I said, he's compelled to do so, trying to reconcile the fact that so many great leaders over the generations did not come to Israel, did not come to live in Israel. But the point has been made that, you know, while many poskim, many authorities over the centuries have discussed the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, no one else made this distinction between it being voluntary, it being a mitzvah but not a chovah. Right? So this chidush, I'll call it a chidush, this chidush of Rav Moshe, it's, you know, you can take it or leave it. Okay? Rav Moshe was the posek ador. I mean, who am I to argue with Rav Moshe? But again, Many poskim discussed this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, assumed that it applied even nowadays, and did not make such a distinction between it being a mitzvah and not a chovah, not an obligation. I think part of the halachic discussion, part of the debate of this mitzvah, is I think you have to appreciate just how central this mitzvah is, okay, number one. And number two, I think you have to appreciate this amazing time in history that we live in, okay, and that we've been given this incredible opportunity. So as I mentioned, you know, according to many, the reason why the Rambam does not include this mitzvah in his count of the Taryag and the Sefer Mitzvot is because of how central it is, because of how fundamental, how basic it is. And he writes that if a mitzvah is so central, so basic, that all the other mitzvot of the Torah are based upon it, right, it need not be counted. And as I mentioned, you know, 202 of our 613 mitzvot can only be performed on this soil here. Two-thirds of the Talmud deal with mitzvot that are related to the land of Israel. There's a Gemara in Masechet Sotan, Daf Yudalid, which talks about how Moshe Rabbeinu longed to come on Aliyah, to move to Israel. He says, where if I just a bird, you know? And one of the explanations is because he wanted to perform the mitzvot HaTorah that can only be performed here in this land. Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he was, right? Our teacher, our leader, but he could not perform the mitzvot that can only be performed here in the land of Israel, on her soil. Okay? So it part of the discussion has to be appreciating just how central this is. And we'll end with this passage here in source number 12. This is a famous midrash to Parshat Ekev in the Sifrei. It's actually quoted by the Rashi. It's quoted by Rashi and the Ramban, quoted by the Ramban and Rashi in their commentary on the Torah. And it's a famous passage which suggests that the mitzvot outside of the land of Israel are merely for practice. We observe mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz, they're just for practice. And it's based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Aleph, Hatzivi lach tzionim. Hashem says, I'm going to give you road marks so you don't lose your way. Okay, remember the story of Hansel and Gretel? Right, putting out those breadcrumbs, those road markers. Right? So Yirmiyahu says that Hashem says, I'm going to give you road markers. What are these markers? These markers, the Midrash says, are the mitzvot. I'm going to tell you to perform the mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz just so you remember how to perform them when you return to the land, because this is the proper place for the performance of the mitzvot HaTorah. Take a look at source number 12. The Midrash says, "Afal pi sheni megaleh etchem min ha'aretz l'chutz la'aretz, even though I exile you from the land of Israel, outside the land, hayu mitzuyanim b'mitzvot. You're going to be unique with mitzvot. You're going to be special. Kishetachzaru lo yu aleichem chadashim. So that when you return, they not be like new to you." Right? I'm giving you these mitzvot so that when you eventually come back and perform them where they are supposed to be performed, they are not new. It's nothing new. Mashal lemelech basar v'dam. It's a parable to a king of flesh and blood. Shekaas al ishto, who was very angry. He got angry at his wife, the queen. V'tarfa b'veit aviha. So he tore up, he destroyed her house. Amarla, and he says to her, and he's about to toss her out of the palace. He says to her, "Havei mekushetet b'tachshitech shekeshetichziri lo yu alecha chadashim. Take your jewelry with you, so that when you come back, it's nothing. It's not new to you. You'll know how to dress like a queen. You'll know how to put on your jewelry." Okay. Kach amar Kodesh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael. So too, God said to the Jewish people, "Banai, my children, heyu mitzuyanim b'mitzvot. You should be unique with these mitzvot. Kishetachzeru lo yu aleichem chadashim. So that when you come back to the land of Israel, they not be new to you." Hu Yirmiyahu amar, and this is what Yirmiyahu said when he said in Yirmiyahu lamed aleph, "Hatzivi lach tzionim." Hashem says, "I'm giving you these road marks to make you unique. Elu hamitzvot. They are the commandments sheYisrael mitzuyanim behem, which make the Jewish people unique." Okay, this is incredible, incredible passage in the Medrash, that the mitzvot and chutz la'aretz, they're just for practice, so we know what to do when we come back to Eretz Yisrael. This is the proper place for the performance of the mitzvot HaTorah. Right? The Torah lives and breathes in its natural habitat here in the state of Israel. Yes, you can take a panda out of Asia and raise it in the Bronx. I'm sure many of you have been to the Bronx Zoo, right? Or the San Diego Zoo, maybe if you're from California. You can take a panda from Asia and raise it in the Bronx or in San Diego, We lived in Omaha for a year. I was the associate rabbi of the Orthodox shul there. They have a nice zoo, the Omaha Zoo. Right? A panda has no business in Omaha. Okay. You could argue maybe Jews have no business in Omaha. I'm not going to say that. There's a nice Jewish community there. I lived there for a year. But you can raise a panda in a zoo somewhere else, but that's not its natural habitat. That's not where it belongs. It's not where it grows and thrives. The Torah lives and breathes in its natural habitat here in the land of Israel. This is where the Jewish people live and thrive. Okay, and just another part of the discussion, we're already out of time, but in addition to the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, I think we also have to appreciate this incredible moment in history that we are living in. And I think that has to impact this discussion of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and this mitzvah of Aliyah. The Chatam Sofer, you know, writing in the 18th, 19th century, the Chatam Sofer writes in the Tshuva and Yoredeya that we have more of an obligation to make Aliyah now in our times. And he's writing that, you know, 200 years ago. Okay? So with the establishment of the State of Israel, the obligation of Aliyah, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, has only intensified. Today it's a reality, and it's even easier today than it was 13 years ago when I made Aliyah. I think it's even easier today than it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Rav Yaakov Emdin, who didn't live in Israel, was not fortunate to live in Israel, but he writes a number of very, very important things in his commentary to the Sidur about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. One of the difficult questions he asks is, he writes in his commentary to the Sidur Beit El, Sulam Beit El there, in the Sidur Beit Yaakov, he says, how is it possible that you have good Jews, Frum Yidden, religious Jews, who spend so much money and resources and effort in order to perform the Mitzvot Torah in the most complete and perfect way, and yet with irreverence and negligence, they fail to perform this beloved mitzvah, a foundation on which the entire Torah hangs? I think that's a question that definitely needs to be answered. It was asked 200 years ago by Rav Yaakov Emdin. I think that question is only more relevant today. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful week. We will see you all, Be'ezrat Hashem, next Wednesday.